Hey, today's daf is daf Samach Tet, and we're holding right at the very first word, very rare occurrence. Tola le Rav Rebbe Benichiti. Now, Rav had written this letter to Rebbe. He didn't. Rashi learns he didn't want something wrong. He didn't want to. It was basically a letter. How was everything? But he didn't want to make it look like he was writing a lot of shilin. You know. So between the lines, he stopped. You know, that had an interesting thought. What do you hold that lover would be? That's a Benichiti Rashi learns between the lines. Tosfos learns that this was a massive letter that had sewed pages, one after the other, with hundreds of shilas. And like the smaller ones, you would write like between the sewing. So the chiti is the rows of the tefirot. Have you seen any of
The stitches?
The seams, yeah, between the stitches, yeah. It's just a cute way of saying it. One of these letters that you need a magnifying glass, you're looking all over it. So anyway, so this Shaila, he writes, what is the din of Achim Shishi Ibdu? The brothers, after the death of the father, went out and were Mish'abed in the Chassim. The question that he had is, what's the halacha legabe parnasa mizonot? Now yesterday we learned, remember, that according to Rebbe Yogova, bein le parnasa, and bein le, the mizonos literally, remember parnasa would mean in the dunya, from nechasim that are metatron. However, when it comes to mishu'ubadim, so then he said, for parnasa, you would be govim mishu'ubadim, over there it's referring to the mishu'ubadim of the father. But when it comes to the mizonot, over there, you're not gova, for you're not motza for mizonot, as we said, because anything that doesn't have a shiur, there's a tikkun hashuk that the rabbanon don't allow collections, otherwise people would be afraid to buy if they could be hit with this enormous bill and need to go sue the guy. That just doesn't work. Now, apparently, it wasn't clear to Rav what that halacha was. Before, we'll see that the din that we had, that Rebbe had passed yesterday, the Farish, took a while to get around. It wasn't something that was normative, and the Gemara refers to it earlier as normative, Maisim B'chol Yom, it says, and so on. That was the Gabi, the Kenet collection from Metatolim. But as far as Meshubadim are concerned, he wanted to know what halacha was. Now, he wrote this question in a funny way, because he said, she'idu, what does that mean, she'idu? They took out a mortgage, the she'idu being that they had actually sold it, so now he got to be Torah from Nalakucha. So then the Maisim, there's two levels in that question. Somebody else already bought the field. And that's also called a shibud. It's now somebody else has got now a lien on the field because they bought it. To take away from them is obviously a lot more difficult than shibud in the sense that a bank took a mortgage on it and now you want to tell the bank, no, I'm sorry, but we have to take away your mashkeh. I'm not taking away your money. I'm just taking away something that ultimately you could collect from. So he used a very vague language. He asks Rebbe in this letter, Mahu. Now, Rebbe Chia was sitting there in front of Rebbe when Rebbe's reading this letter and trying to decipher what Rav is saying. You know, he's got his little magnifying glass. So Abba Yosef Rebbe Chia come in. Omar Leith, Rebbe Chia said, what does he mean? Machro o Mishkenu? Did it mean they sold it? The brothers sold a field that was supposed to be now for the Mizanis of Parnassa? Or does he mean that they took out a mortgage? So Rebbe said to him, my nafkamina, you know what, it makes absolutely no difference. Because bein machro, bein shemishkenu, I don't care how the shibud came, whether through an actual sale or through taking out a mortgage. The halacha is, as we learned yesterday, motzi in the parnasa, vein motzi in the mizonot. So when it comes now to the nedunya, which is not one of the tnayak tuva, which is a special halacha, so over there, it's a dover kavua, and that we take out from the mishubadin for both. Even if they had sold it, we're going to take it, and they'll come and collect their money back from the brothers, they shouldn't have sold it. And we will not collect from mizonot, which is the halacha on all of the tnayak tuva. We don't go after nechasin mishubadin. Now, what about Rav? I mean, Rav writes the letter. Can't Rav be a little bit more careful in his language? I mean, why didn't Rav say what he was asking? So Rav, if Rav is concerned about what the din would be if somebody else actually took possession of the field, so why didn't he write? If Rav was concerned about what the din was of a mashkon, he should have said, mishkenu, but what's this funny language she could do? What did he have in mind? See, mishkenu, mishkenu. The truth is, Rav Tavayim Kami Boilei. Rav really was misupik on both levels. So he's saying to himself, look, I know this is a weird word to use, but that's the whole point. Because if I'll tell Rebbe specifically what I'm asking, he'll answer me on that question, right? So let's say I write him, Ikatim Nelei Machru. Suppose I write him a Shiloh. What would be if the brothers sold the field, right? So now, if he'll answer me on Necha Ishalach Le Dumutzin, if he'll tell me, even if they sold the field, take it away from the buyers. And for sure, if they only mortgage the field, we'll take it away from the bank, right? That's for sure. So then, Hanechi Shalach Liyafil answered me, the Motziin, take it away. So Kol Shekein Mishkanu, then I'll know the answer by Mishkanu. But suppose he answers me, well, if they sold it, you can't take it away. But now I still don't know what the halacha is about the mortgage, because maybe a mortgage, you could take it away. So Yishalach Liyin Motziin, Akate Mishkanu Kami Baile, I'm still going to be worried about what the din is Mishkanu. How about if I write him Mishkanu? I'll write him, what's the din if the brothers took a mortgage out on the field? So again, if he's going to tell me, look, even if they just took out a mortgage, we're not going to take the field away from the bank, and they're still going to be able, the bank will still be able to collect. So then I'll say, okay, sir, kosher came machru, then I'll know the answer to both questions. Because then for sure, if they actually sold it, someone else took possession of the field, obviously I'm not going to take it away. I didn't even take it away as collateral. I'm not going to take away the field itself. But how about yishalach li motziin? How about if he answers me, that actually the halacha is that on a mashkan, just for collateral, we'll take it away and collect for the daughters out of it. Then I'm going to think to myself, okay, but what would have been the din if I would have asked him machru? Maybe for that he wouldn't have taken away. So I can't risk, what am I going to do? Try to get another one of these letters with a magnifying glass? I can do this once every few years, I can't do this every Monday and Thursday. You know, I mean, not everybody has the patience of Rav Moshe, that's all, you know. These rabbis would call them for things that any idiot who learned the Mishnah Berurah knows the halacha. You have to call Rav Moshe. Anyway, the Rav couldn't do that to Rebbe. So therefore, so he said, you know what? I'll write him this weird word. So then if I write she'ibdu, which doesn't have a clear meaning, he's going to be forced to address the issue on both levels. So I'll write him she'ibdu, echtov lo she'ibdu, unquote, the mashmahaki, mashmahaki, which has both implications, and then he's going to figure, okay, if you can't define what you're asking, I'll tell you both. But the truth is, I need to know both. This is why I'm not going to have to bother him again. Rabbi Yochanan said, now out of context of this conversation, Rabbi Yochanan just came up with a psak, that the way that he held halacha was, that whether we're talking about these cases of parnasa, or we're talking about cases of mizonot, he wasn't talking about shibdu machru, he had nothing to do with that previous case. Echad zeh means either for parnasa, or for mizonot, emotzi, we will not take from a mechasim mishu'ubadi. Now, in that he's obviously arguing with Rebbe. As we saw, Rebbe's psak was, the halacha is, we're motzi'in when it comes for parnasa, and we're not motzi'in when it comes to the mizonot. Now the truth is that, this is a little bit strange, because yesterday we said, Hamasim b'koyom. I mean, it was like, that was the most, everybody knows that. No Bezdin argues on that. What's Rabbi Yochanan doing over here? Basically, the Rishonim explained that this was still very early on. This is still in the days of Rebbe here. In other words, it's right after Rebbe gave this psak, what is it, 20 years later, 30 years later, the psak hadn't been mekubal all over. What we were talking about, we were trying to figure out what was Rav Huna trying to say that Rebbe meant. I mean, that's already 100 years ago. I mean, everybody knows what the halacha is about that. But Einat Inami at the time of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan himself could have even argued with Rebbe. I mean, it wasn't yet a normative psak that we could have said everybody knows. That's how Tosis explained yesterday what we were asking, and we weren't asking what's Rav Huna's chiddush. We were asking what's Rav Huna's chiddush to say that that's what Rebbe meant when now everybody knows that's what Rebbe meant. That was the point. So Rabbi Yochanan argued. Rabbi Yochanan said, no, actually the halacha is, you're not motziin, we don't take from the chasim mishubadim, whether we're talking about panasam or talking about mizonot. Now, the question is, is the point, I mean, we do know that this is so much an accepted psak. Is it the pshat that Rabbi Yochanan hadn't yet heard this psak? But if he had heard the psak, he certainly would have been mekabalim, that this is the way Rebbe had determined that we should be nayag alach lamaisa. The yishmielei havi mekabalim, and therefore we shouldn't view this as another opinion. It simply was behind the times. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan knew perfectly well that Rebbe held that we do collect for Parnassa from Mishubadim, but and he held that we can't do that. Let's see. The Itma. This person dies, leaving two daughters, Uben, and a son. Now, the first daughter goes and gets married, and she takes her, skims off for 10%, the Yisr Nechasi. The second one didn't get married yet. So she never collected the Yisr Nechasim. And the son dies, leaving now the money to them. Ooh, so now, what do we do about her Yisr Nechasim? Do we first take off 10% off the top because she, after all, had that right to be able to collect if she would get married? And then we split the remainder between the two daughters who are the heirs at this point? Or do we say, no, We just split whatever is left, but she never collected. Now you see how this relates to the previous problem. Because if we view this as a she'ibud, so then it means that the lien was there before the son died. So the lechora she should be able to collect it first. So that's why we're bringing this in. So over here comes along the first one, Shia gets married, takes her 10%, the second one doesn't get married, and the son dies. Now she wants to get married. So Amar Rav Yochanan, Shnia Vitra, forget about it. The second one has no tainani. Once she's the heiress, she can't start talking about, well, you know, I'm a daughter, I have a right to 10%. That's it. Amar Rav Chanina, as Rav Chanina says, well, what kind of psak is that? I don't understand. G'dolah mizu Amru. Look, we have a case where you end up not inheriting that property yourself, and instead the brothers went ahead and sold the property. Okay? The other daughter, the second daughter, can come along. Obviously, he's quoting the words of Rebbe to Rebbe Yochanan. He's saying, we learned that Mutzi'in the Parnassah. They could come along and take away that field from the people that had bought it from the brothers, even though they'd already sold it. Well, your sack is crazy. If the brother died, they don't have to be motzi in it. They're just a question of how they're going to be machalic, something that's in their own rishus. So if they could have taken it from another person, a stranger, out of his rishus, isn't it ridiculous to say that she doesn't get the right to keep what's hers from the arusha before it's split evenly with her sister? What kind of psak is this? Now notice that Rabbi Yochanan, what Rabbi Yochanan should have said, he should have said, says who?
If in fact Rabbi Yochanan had never heard about this, and all of a sudden Rabbi Chanina comes and tells him this as if it's accepted, his first reaction should have been, what are you talking about? That's not true. I never heard of such a thing. Who says such a halacha? Since he didn't say that, and nonetheless he argues, so in other words, it's clear he knew who said this halacha. Rebbe said this halacha. But he disagrees. So Rabbi Chanina is saying, well, we learned this is the din. Well, I don't agree that that's the din. So therefore, ein achinani, in the case, perhaps, if you held that, you'd be right to say that in this case, for sure, that she should be able to skim off for 10% before splitting. But I happen to disagree with the very halacha that you're bringing as a proof to it. So it's clear, therefore, that Rabbi Yochanan knew about Rebbe and nonetheless didn't care about Rebbe. So the imita, namely manamra, if it's true that he had never heard about Rebbe's psak, why didn't he just say, who said that? Where is that psak from? Says the Gemara, wait a minute. It's very possible that at the time that he had made his psak, he did not hear of Rebbe's. And in fact, v'kishmiale, when he did hear, maybe 6 months later, and then this conversation took place, at this point, he already not only had heard, but had actually accepted what Rebbe said, which is why he didn't respond with who says. He even accepts that it's true. It's just that he's saying it may be true, but it's irrelevant, because shani hatam tika ravacha beta. Over here, the point has nothing to do with the issue that you're talking about being motzi'in from a buyer. Over here, there's a whole other question. Remember that the parnasai is given based on an understanding that this is something that the father wanted for his daughter, even to the extent of our analyzing, according to Abshitot, of what type of desire for his daughter did he have. But in this case, where the daughter herself becomes the heiress, you're telling me that the father wanted the daughter to skim off before she splits? Why would we say that? So therefore, over here, Taina's Rabbi Yochanan, the daughter got very rich. She got very rich. This Iker of Ocha Beta, she is now very broad household. I mean, she's become now rich herself. What does she need the father's 10% of his nechassim for? She already owns an estate.
Rav Yemar, Rav Ashi, what does that mean? That's the logic over here, that Iker of Ocha Beta. I mean, so let's say that she would have won the lottery. One of the daughters wins the lottery. So now we're going to say, well, man, if her father would have known she was going to win the lottery, why would he have given her partner? Is that what she would have said? I mean, these are things that are not... These are not planned for. I mean, this is a schus that she has from her father. She's going to say, well, if she hits the jackpot, so then there's no din of parnasa. Nobody knows that, do they? So ashkecha mitziya bi'alma. So they're also ikarevach beta. Oh, she's rich. What does she need parnasa for? You're going to tell me, that all of a sudden her father wouldn't have wanted her to have something from him. Where would you get that from? Omar Lay said, Rav Ashi, I don't mean because she's rich. I mean because she's rich from the very nechassim that you're trying to give her the yisur nechassim. That's what I mean. Ana rabach beta mehani nichseka. I mean, what am I talking about over here? She's getting rich. We want to take off 10% from the same nechassim that she owes? Doesn't make sense. Omar Mema. The din is that a bat, when it comes to her yisur nechassim, is a yoreshet. We don't view her as a debtor that she can come and collect as a baalat chov. She has a din of an actual yoreshet, which makes tremendous nafkaminas, as we'll see. Omer Rav Ashi la'amemar, are you trying to say that if the brothers want to pay her money, they want to give her cash, they can't get rid of her? that she has a din of the Yoredet, and she can say, I want the field. And they can't say, forget about the field. We owe you money. It's in a cousin. Here's your money. Goodbye. Is that what you're saying? That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that she is a Yoreshet. Don't they? Well, you're going to ask me a question. Yes, that's what I'm saying. You're telling me, she's a Yoreshet. Okay, you want to give her a piece of the estate? And she's going to say, now wait a minute. I have a right to the whole estate, 10%. I want 10% of everything. So they can't give her one field? That's exactly what I'm saying. You got any more questions? That's what I'm saying. She is an heiress in terms of 10%. And the brothers, they have the rest. That's exactly what I'm saying. Ravashi says that's crazy. Abad is a balat chova. They owe her money. And the truth is, Amemar also in the end recognized that he made a mistake. And that the din is that she really is a balat chov. How do I know? The Omer Rebbe Yumi greater than Yichumi. I was personally present. A woman comes and she's suing for her 10%. And I could tell that he agreed that had the brothers wanted to pay her off, he would have accepted that money. How do I know? Because the Shani Meaki, the brothers, when they were in court, were so angry at the sister. So they were screaming at her. And they said, we don't want you to have any piece of this action. If we had enough money, we would have paid you off. Get the heck out of here. We don't want to see you again. And they're saying, we would have gotten rid of you. V'ishtik. And Amemar didn't say anything. He didn't say to them, gentlemen, you have no right to get rid of her. She's an heiress just like you are heirs. So clearly Amemar must have had charata from his shita. By the way, it's a beautiful tesis. The Rabbi Natan constantly referred to this sugya. Says Taisus, and any time that somebody would say something in court, even just start to throw it out, that wasn't true lahalacha, the Rabbeinu Tam would say the Dayan has to say, not true, because otherwise, what's the Gemara's riot? Amemar just said, he heard, but who cares? Let them scream. It's not in the day. They don't have it anyway. They don't have the money anyway. If we had money, but I got to sit here talking about if my grandmother had wheels. So that's just, as I've been telling you, see from here that a dayan is achroi on the interaction of the bezdin, and he has to define what the halacha is. It's fantastic Gemara. It's not just he has to give forth the psak halacha. He has to let every different aspect of the court transcript stand la halacha. So if there's something in there that's wrong, he's got to say, wouldn't it help you? Exactly. Unbelievable. No, that's a very, very important yisod. Indeed, became part of law. It's understood as part of law. So since he didn't say anything, he must have had charata from his psak. Now there's another maisa. Hashta the amrit balat chov habi. Now the implications, by the way, of this psak are very important. If she is only a balat chov and she's not now a yoreshet, I have to first determine whether she's the balat chov of the father or she's the balat chov of the brother. What's the nafkamina? There's a big nafkamina. Lamai nafkamina. The nafkamina is, how does she collect? Is she gova out of Beinani, like a balkhov, without needing to take a shvua? Because the halakha is a balat chov, does not, because again, a takanat ashuk. They didn't make any takanas of shvua. And he has a right to collect from Beinani. That's the standard properties, in terms of how easy they are to sell. How good the level of property is. However, when somebody is collecting a debt from an heir, so if she was collecting from the brothers, the father's debt, when you collect from an heir, you have to make a shvua to the yatomim, because they don't know what was going on, so you have to swear that I didn't collect any of this value before, and so on and so forth. And when you're collecting from heirs, you can only collect ziburit. So it makes a tremendous nafkamina whether she's viewed as a direct balat chov of the brothers, or she's coming to collect from the brothers the chov of the father. Therefore, we're going to need to determine whether she's a balat chov of them, and she's not coming li parami yichsei yitomim, which is a whole different halacha. So that's mine. I want to know what the din is. Tashmar, I'll tell you what the din is. Ravina agve labarti de Ravashi, mimar bere de Ravashi. Now Ravashi had two sons, Rapsama and Mar. Rapsama died. There's a funny Rashi over here, which doesn't seem to make much sense. Rashi says that Rapsama died while Ravashi was alive. which the Rishonim point out makes no sense at all, because if that's the case, then you're collecting directly from the father, not the, I mean, what's it have to, then you'd be collecting for sure from the father to the son. And it must be, the Yeshua said it's clearly a mistake, and the Rashi doesn't, it's not the Chayav Adarav. Rav Ashi died, Rav Sama died after, although you should know there are those who are fretting the Hezron. But Rav Sama died afterwards. So now she is basically coming to collect what was the original. It'll be passing by in a sec, don't worry about it. What was the original Yerusha, correct? And he went ahead and he collected for the daughter of Rav Ashi from her living brother Mar Benanis, without a Shua, but from her deceased brother, his heirs, Rav Sama's heirs, who left a son, Mibreid Rav Sama, Breid Rav Ashi, there she could only collect Ziburit with a Shua, because she was collecting from an heir. So that means as long as her brothers are alive, she's considered to be a Balat Chov of the brothers. V'haraya, she didn't need to make a Shua on the brother that was living, only on the children of the brother that had died she needed to make a Shua. So you see from there very clearly that she would collect normally from her brothers, Beninis, without a Shua, and she's considered to be their Balat Chov. Now, what used to be very often is that a person would go to court in a different city, get a psak halacha that was nogea another city's bezdin, where over there that's where they were, that's where the property was, and so on, and then they would bring a court order not to open the case again, but rather the court here has determined X, and we empowered the court there to actualize our psak. No, just for convenience, if they were in a different place, and the suit took place in a different place, now they have to collect in another city. So we have to start, oh, everybody's got to travel to the other city. So they send a court order, the court goes ahead, sells the property, and sends the money.
So it's not as if they're in place A and go specifically to place B.
No. So anyway, the note, the court order read, and this was sent to Rabba Bar Huna Azur. So he sent him like this. When the woman holding this note comes in front of your court, agava iser nechasim, you should collect her iser nechasim afilo mi itztarubla. Collect it even from something connected to the ground. The itztarubla was the base for the mill, the grinder. And that's considered to be mechubar lekarka. It's like real estate. You can collect it even though obviously you can move it and so on. But that's, nobody walks off with an itztarubla. That's the equivalent of collecting real estate. It's like a house that you could collect from that. Amar Rav Ashi, ki avinim be Rav Kahana, havim avinim afilu mi'amola de beiti. I want you to know, I would attend Rav Kahana's bezdin, so we used to collect even from the rent that was due on a house where the people were renting the house. Say, Tosis explains they were already there, let's say, for a half a year. But since the money that comes in at the end of the year, even though the suit only took place in the middle of the year, is considered to be the actual real estate, because it's money that's coming in from the house, and it wasn't due until the end of the year. So in the mail, you could collect for the woman from this property. So even from a maladabeta. Rav Anan sent the following message to Rav Huna. And this was a big mistake, because Rav Huna did not exactly like to be addressed by Rav Anan as a friend. Rav Huna was much bigger gadol than Rav Anan. But Rav Anan was feeling his oats, he was the avbezdin in his community, so he writes a letter to Rav Huna, Huna Chavrin Shlam, our friend Huna. Not a good idea. Ki at yahai itita lekamach, when the bearer of this note, this woman, comes in front of your court, agba isunich, go collect the 10%. So Rav Sheshes was sitting in front of Rav Huna, which is also a big mistake, when this letter arrived. Oh boy. Oh my lay, so Rav Huna tells Rav Sheshes, now listen here, I'm giving you a message, word for word, you're to say it over exactly as I said it to you, including all the four letter words. And if you don't say it over the way I said it to you, you should be in Cherim yourself, you understand? Okay, now here is the message. You memorize it and you tell it to him to his face. Okay, this is what you say. If any guy who refuses to give over the message word for word as I say it should be now the needly. Here's what you say to him. Anan, Anan. Tell me, Mr. Anan. You tell me to collect the tenth of the nechasim. Am I supposed to collect this from Mikar Koy or Mimimimitatale, or do you not know? And by the way, I have another question for you. Man yatve be marzicha bereish. When you come, now a be marzicha was a very cultured way of referring to the house of an ovel. Right? Now he suspected Rav Anan may not even know what it means. But others say he was trying to be Meramis to Rav Anan. The ovel sits at the head, not because he's the greatest, but because he happened to be the right man in the right place, or wrong place, depending on whether you look at it. But that's what you are. Don't give me this chavrin stuff. You're basically sitting barosh because you're worthless, but you just happen to be in the right place. Okay, so just tell me who sits at the head of the table in a Beit HaAvel. Poor Rav Sheshes. He's got to face Rav Anan with this message. So he comes to Rav Anan and he says, "Oi, listen, Ma Rabba, I mean, Rebbe is a guy in the Gadol, a tzaddik. The problem is that Rav Huna is the Rebbe of Rebbe, you see. And not only that, he put me at the chair if I don't say over the following message. So please do not shoot the messenger."
I'll say this
for that. So please. Vishamute Shamit, and I am not turning on the tape recorder, this isn't me, Mandalo Amale, and I promise you, he loved the Shamit. If he hadn't put me into Nidway, I never would have said this stuff. Okay, here we go. He closes his eyes and says, beep. Anan, Anan, mimekarkoi umimetafili, uman yativ be marzicha bereisha. Oh, Rav Anan is devastated. Goes to Marut, but they complain. Look at this. He sends me this message with a busha. And then, you know what? Honestly, I don't know what the heck the question means. He said, I don't know what it is. Maybe you could give me some answers. Oh, my leg, wait. Easy now. Emily, easy. Let's start from the beginning. This doesn't make sense. What exactly happened? Oh, my leg, I said, this is what happened. Somebody says, you idiot. God, the Lord, you put your foot in your mouth, and now you complain. You don't even know what a mazicha is. And you're going to write to Rav Huna, our friend Huna. I mean, now you're concerned that he embarrassed you a little bit. You could have been shot. Anyway, what is this marzicha, now that you mention it? So my marzicha. A marzicha is a beautiful way of referring to an ovel. The chtiv, where do we see this? The chtiv, ko amar Hashem, al tavo beit marzeach, and it says, al teleich lispod lahem, and so on. Then I don't want anybody even caring about the destruction of Klal Yisrael. Don't even bother making a hesped. So you see that a marzeach is somebody, we'll see later on, the loshen is actually merum, is in marzeach, mar, is very bitter. And Zach is the sense of he's just feeling out of it, you know, he's floating away. So that's what he...
Disconnected?
Disconnected, yeah. So, Omer Rabbi Avu, indeed, now that you raise the question, who's Yoshev Barosh? So it says, Rabbi Avu, how do we know that the Oval is the one who sits at the head of the proceedings? Shenema, when they bring in the Seudah, Shenema, Efchar Darkam Ve'eshev Rosh, Kasher Avelim Yinachem. Of course, the problem is that Yinachem means this is the person who's coming to be Menachem Avelim. You're trying to bring a right that the Avelim are the ones. That doesn't make sense. Yes, it's the Gemara. This is referring to Melech Begdud Kasher Avelim Yinachem. So Yinachem is Achelim. Why are you reading it Yinachem? It's Yinachem. Omer of Nachem Bar Yitzchak, because the way that it's written is Yinachem, not Yinachem. A very interesting Rashi here that says, if you want to write a patach, then you have to write an aleph. So had it said Yud Nun Aleph, then it's Yinachem. But otherwise, without an aleph to indicate that it must be read as a patach, the default position would be Yinachem, which is that he will become Menucham. Tosfos says, come on. Where do we ever find such a thing? That's very, very dochuk pshat. The Torah would have had to write Ktiv Malay to let you know that there's a patach. Where do you ever see Ktiv Malay came out of it? With a vav, maybe. Where else? Therefore, it says, Teisvizah, the pshat over here is because, since it can be read in either direction, if you wanted to say you're being Menachem, it should have said Beferish Menachem, right? So that's the pshat. If you said Kasher Melech Menachem, and then it would have been clear. If you leave it open to interpretation, it must be because, in fact, the Navi wants you to hear Yinachem. That's the point. So, but in any event, it shows Mesa Rosh, you sit like a Melech. Yeah, great, like a Melech. An Ovel is like a Melech. That's wonderful. So Kasher Avelim Yinachem. Marzutra says, look, you see it from another passage very clearly. Mihocha. Visar Mirzach Siruchim. Very interesting sort of play on sounds. So the Mar Vezach, that's the Mar Zach, becomes a Sar, a Sir, Lisiruchim, people that are Siruchim, that means that they are coming from parties and so on. These are the big party of people. So it means the high class, Hoi Polloi, so he becomes now the Tsar because of the fact that the contrast is so beautiful in the pasuk. Right? So you see, here's this miserable guy, the Avel, and here are all the people dancing in, but he's the Tsar, and they're like nobodies. It becomes now the Tsar Suchim. Omar Rabbah, getting back to the halacha, you recall, we were talking about halacha before you started having so much fun. The halacha is we collect from karka, not from metaltalit, not the way Rebbe said it. Bein lebezone, bein lektuva, bein leparnasa. Of course, this is not nogea anymore because nowadays we have the takanat hagioni. Yoran. Hamashlish ma'ot lebito. A person now gives over to, he's dying, and he makes an agent responsible to see to it that this bank account should be given when his daughter gets married, should be given for the nadunya, but not stam, he wants him to buy a field, and that field should be available for his daughter as real estate, then the son-in-law will be Eichel Perez. So she says, as usual, give it to my husband, I trust him, whatever he'll do is fine. You know, daddy didn't know him, or daddy would have known this guy, with no problem, just give him the money straight up. So Yomer Neman Bali Alai. No way. Yaseh HaShalish Mashu Shlash B'Yadot. Div Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir says, you were made an agent with a particular instructions. You do the instructions. Says Rebbe Yossi, I don't understand. And if he had already bought the field, and she wants to sell the field, somebody's going to be able to stop her? She'll go sell the field. I don't understand. It's her field. So why can't you just say in advance, look, can you do me a favor, save me the trouble, give the cash, I want the cash, we need to invest in a business, that's how we're going to be living, I want him to be able to invest. You're going to go buy a field, and I'm going to have to pay a broker to sell the field, leave me alone. So what would be the point of saying, blindly, walk and do what you were told to do? I mean, it sounds very nice and moral, but it's absurd. All you're doing is wasting time and wasting money. She says they need to invest the money. So why is this any better? Now, so therefore, harik mechura me'akshav. So, just sell it now, so to speak. It's already sold. Here's the cash. Give him the cash. To go through a purchase and then a sale? That's ridiculous. Now, the truth is, Rebbe Meir holds that she would not be able to sell, as we'll see, as Tosis points out. Bamed varma muri bigdola. When do we say this? Only if she is old enough. When do we say what? Not clear exactly. Who's saying what? The Gemara is going to make this clear. Avu biktana. We're talking about a ktana in ma'ase ktana klum. Then, for sure, Tana can't do anything. She's got no legal rights to make these kind of determinations. Wait till we see what a goyin our David is on. Wait till we see. He already knows the whole sugya on Bolin. He keeps doing this. This is what happens when you go through Shas time and time again. You start thinking like the Gemara. That's all there is to it. Beautiful. We love you.
It's
a scoot. Somebody now who has set aside money to be given to his son-in-law to be. Likach mehem sadeh levito, so that he should have the peirot of a field that will be owned by his daughter. V'hi omered yinatnu lebaali. She says, give it to the husband, I want it invested. We're buying a business. So minhan is, it's amazing how contemporary this is, it goes on all the time, right? So minhan is, I mamish no cases. And mamish, no cases that ended up in court exactly like this. Wasting millions of dollars fighting, trying to loosen up money that the father had. It's horrific tragedies here, like this. Crazy. So she wants them to invest the money in a business.
Daddy didn't know best.
Daddy did not know best. Not in these cases. So the halacha is, Nina nisu'in harishut biyada. Look, if she's already married, so then of course, because the father obviously only meant that it should be in the hands of the agent until the nisuin. I mean, once already she's married, so then the baal anyway. Isaka did the peris, so we could decide what to do with it. But mina erisin, if it's mina erisin, it hasn't then been given over to rishus yet. At that point, then he has to do what he was told. Rabbi Yossi Omer, hagidola, if we're talking about a gedola, she's now an adult and has a right legally to sell fields. So bein menanis in bein mena erusin arishut biyadam. If it would come, however, to a ketana, then we don't listen at all. Bein menanis in bein mena erusin yaseh hashalish mashu shlash biyado. Now, let's first define the machlokas precisely. What are they arguing about? Ma binai. Are they arguing also, as Tosfos learns, about a case of a ketana min ha-nisuin? Is it that Rabbi Meir holds? Because Rabbi Meir didn't say anything here about what the din would have been of the ketana. He said min ha-nisuin, it's okay. It's Rabbi Yossi who suddenly brings in Gedoyla, right? So does that mean that according to Rabbi Meir, even a ketana, once it's after the nisuin, she could say, I trust my husband? And it's only Rabbi Yossi who's saying not? Are they also arguing about that? And obviously not the only thing that they're arguing in, but are they also arguing about that case? And that Rabbi Meir holds, even though she's a ketana, or should be a da, and Rabbi Yossi is coming along to say, no, no, even a minute suing she'd have to be a gedola, and not a ketana. So gedola in ketana lo. No. Because, how do you read the words, av ketana, ein ma'ase ketana klum? Explain those words in our Mishnah, okay? Who said those words? Who said the words, ein ma'ase ketana klum? If it's Rabbi Yossi, so then Rabbi Yossi said, look at the first part of the Mishnah. Mireisha Shamatli, if you know how to read the Mishnah, you already know that Rabbi Yossi holds to that. Because Rabbi Yossi said to Rabbi Meir, V'chiyena ela sadev, yirotzala mochra. Let's pretend he already bought the field. Can't she sell it? No, not if she's a ketana. She can't sell it, right? So that means that he's only referring to a gedola, the batzvini, a gedola who could sell. He has a title to Rabbi Meir. But ketana de la batzvini ilo? Obviously, he was never arguing about a ketana. Therefore, these closing words must be Rabbi Meir. But I thought Rabbi Meir said that Shali should always do what he's supposed to do. Ah, so therefore, our Mishnah is basically missing a line. So it should read like this, starting from the words, Ya'aseh ha-shalish mashu shlash biyado. Now, before we say divrei Rabbi Meir, insert, Bameh devarim amurim min ha-erusin, avo min ha-nesuin ha-reshut biyada. Furthermore, Bameh devarim amurim b'gdola, avo b'ktana in ma'aseh ktana klum. Okay, so clearly we now understand that Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah was allowing for Minan Nisuin, and he was the one that was saying, in Masa Ketana Klum, now everything becomes clear. So the only area that's left that they're arguing about is the Gedola Minan Erusin. Because we're all agreed that a Ketana, even Minan Nisuin, is garnished. Right? And we're all agreed that a Gedola Minan Nisuin is allowed, even Rabbi Meir. So that means, so what are they arguing? A Gedola Minan Erusin, Ikminayim. Itma Revira Mashma Alok Rabbi Yossi. Rav Amar Rav Nachman, halachic Rabbi Meir. Now, it once happened, and it was a whole mice that was behind it, but they were claiming that Ilfa wasn't as good. It was all mice. Ilfa didn't learn all the prices, and so he decides, what kind of business is this? Because I don't know those, I know everything from the Mishnah. Okay, so Ilfa goes, climbs up to the top of the mast of this schooner, okay? And he's hanging from the mats. Biskari the Makuta. And he says, okay, challenge. Anybody who presents me with a braita that I never heard of before, that I cannot tell him instantly where the source of that braita is in a Mishnah, that's it, I'm letting go. These guys are right.
Literally truth
is there. Exactly. Okay. So, Ikidamer and Milta, the very Vichia, Rabboshaya, Velopashitna, let me matnit, and Afilam, Iskaria, Vetavana. I'm jumping and drowning right here. Atahu Saba. Tanale. What are you going to do with this bright? I bet you never heard this one. Haomer, Tnu Shekel, Ivni, Bishabat. Ruin, Levanai, Bishabat. Ruin, Litain, Lam, Sela. A guy is dying, and as a Shchiv Merah is defining what to do with his property. So he says, give now a half of a sela, one shekel for my children, which is what they'll need to live off of every week. And prices go up, and you can't really get along in that kind of money. And they are now ruin for two shekel for a sela. Not the mem sela, because we assume that if he would have known that the prices were going to go sky high, he would have given more money, or he would have built in an allowance for inflation.
Is that the same as winning the lottery? No. It's more likely.
No. Yeah, I mean, he wants one of his children. He just doesn't want them to be spendthrifts. He certainly wants them to have enough. The imam, if he said, don't give them a penny more than a shekel for a Shabbos, then we can't. I'll have to do them ela shekel. I end up giving them ela shekel. He's making it very clear. He does not want them to have more. Fine. Now, Imamar imetu yishuach erim tachtayim. How about if he says that if my children die and we are left with this trust fund that we've been supplying them their weekly allowance, then I want other people, not their heirs, to now take over this fund. So then clearly he has an interest in preserving the fund's capital. In which case we can't say he certainly would have wanted to give his sons more, maybe not, because he's apparently trying to preserve this money for somebody else. I mean, maybe it's a charitable fund of some kind that was a living trust. I mean, so then you can't do it. So in that case, Ben Shamar Altitnu Ella, doesn't matter how he placed it, since he wants to preserve the capital, in Ella Shekel. So, here's your chance. Either you die or you give us the answer. Omar Le, actually, it's a very cute. Ben Ishkai says that really he was a very good swimmer. Because he asks, how is he allowed to make a deny that he's going to commit suicide if it's an Isser? He says, and you'll notice he doesn't climb to the top of the base of Medrash's roof and say, but no, he goes onto a ship. Very dramatic, but not a very good swimmer. That's very interesting. Kind of stuff that he always does. All right. So in any event, he says, that's simple. That's our Mishnah. David will tell you that one. Hamani Rebbe Meir, the Yom HaMitzvah LeKayem Divrei HaMeir. Clearly, that's the sort of what Rebbe Meir is saying. Don't give me what you think she legally would have had a right to do. You were empowered. A guy is dying. He's telling you to do this. Let's not start analyzing what the legal rights are of the recipient. That's not the issue. You have a chiyuv to do what you were told to do. So it is a moral issue. So if that's the case, then it means that we will even use our seichel to understand. He's saying precisely this. We have no right to do different. Okay, to be continued, Bezrat Hashem, 9:00.